All right, so the thing, right? It's kind of a ploy to, some call it a litmus test to figure out whether you're a pessimist or an optimist, or what's your worldview or something. But I mean, it can change too, right? So I have these two up here now. Let's see if this changes your thoughts at all. So if we do it this way, right? Okay, now one's full, one's empty. Let's hope we don't spill. Now, if I do this, right? Assume those are half, even if they're not perfect. What is this one? What's this one? Why does it change? Depends on your circumstance, right? So it might change. It's like a workshop. Sometimes it depends. How it started, how the circumstances. I did not workshop this with my wife. I really didn't. I keep all of this under wraps from her. Like, unless she's really involved, otherwise she doesn't know anything about these. So she didn't know I was going to play that. But she's right. It can be a general worldview, it can be a general mindset. You're half empty, half full, pessimist, optimist. But I think this is totally true. The circumstance absolutely matters sometimes. So why? Why are we bringing up pessimism and optimism and worldview? Well, it's what we're going to kind of look at today. Today we start a new series for the whole spring. We're going to do what I'm calling an Old Testament survey. We are going to look at pieces of four different Old Testament books, some of which maybe you have never touched before or read, some of which have kind of these well-known Bible stories, but we want to take a look at again. So throughout the spring, we'll some other stuff mixed in, but we'll be looking at four different books. And today we start 5 weeks in the book of Ecclesiastes. Honest answer, who here has read the book of Ecclesiastes? All right, got a couple saying they've done it. Who here can find it in their Bible? It's okay if you can't. Great, all right, I got a few, that's fine, that's good. I'll be honest, it is not an uber popular book to read, I would say. Mostly, it's not a super cheery book, if we're being honest. It is not one of these that you're going to read and feel super great and uplifted. The title of the series for this mini-series is Does Anything Mean Anything? So that's kind of where this guy is going. All right, so it's not super cheery. It comes right after Proverbs if you're looking to find it in your Bibles. I don't have the same one, I would give you the page number, but it is right after the book of Proverbs. So we're going to look at it today, and why I say Does Anything Mean Anything? Because our author of this book, he is looking for meaning, and he's having a really hard time finding meaning in virtually anything in life. He is absolutely, in terms of his writing style, a glass half empty guy. That is like his view, his mindset, his mentality. So what I want us to do is we're going to look at the beginning of the book today, and I want us to see our writer's perspective, and we're going to dive into it in other weeks, but how can we take this in light of our relationship with Jesus? So how can we shape our perspective based on what we have in Jesus? So we're going to start by reading just the first two verses, chapter 1, verses 1 and 2. It'll all be up here, or you can follow along if you grabbed it in your Bible. So Ecclesiastes 1, verses 1 and 2 say this: "The words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem, meaningless, meaningless," says the teacher, "utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless." What a start to a book. All right. So it starts off saying, "Words of the teacher, son of David." I want to briefly talk about who they think wrote this. A lot of times this book is ascribed to Solomon because it says son of David, King Solomon being David's son. That is possible. He was known as a man of wisdom. He would have been a teacher. There are many very intelligent biblical scholars that are saying maybe it wasn't Solomon based on some of the writing later in the book. It wouldn't have fit Solomon's time or the dates. I'm not as concerned with who actually wrote it as I am with we have somebody in David's family line. So we have somebody in this kingly line. He's a teacher and probably some man of wisdom. So that's kind of the mentality this person is already in. It could have been a collection of somebody's writings and they put it down. But this is kind of where it's at. It's wisdom, but it's search for meaning. We have somebody in the kingly line. That's where we are. Then we get to what is basically the motto of this book: meaningless, meaningless, utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. All right, an extremely pessimistic approach. I see this as like you have that kid that walks around where everything is going terrible and they're throwing their hands up in the air. "I don't want to do this. This is terrible. This is awful. I don't want to wear those shoes. I can't find that toy. Ah, I throw up my hands. Everything is terrible." That's the start of this book. That hits home because that's what my daughter has been like recently. that's okay. We're going to figure it out from here. But that's kind of the mindset that our writer is in here. Now, I think what he's really getting at is things lack substance. There's nothing to anything, right? There's just nothing there. He looks many places, and in the coming weeks, we will look at some specifically. Today's a little bit broader, but we'll look at some specifics, and he just can't find meaning. He can't find substance. I think he wants to. I think he'd like to find it, but he just can't do it. I have here a donut. This is one of my favorite types of donuts, okay? It is filled, you can tell, with custard filling. I've been waiting all morning to bite into that. Listen, I baked you guys cookies last week, so I get a donut this week. Now, I love a filled donut because, as we see, it's got filling, right? When I was in high school, my show choir dance partner, his parents ran the local bakery, so she would roll into early morning rehearsals sometimes with one of these for me, and it was the best thing ever. But I love it because when I bite in, I get that awesome custard. That is my favorite part, the creamy, sweet, rich custard. Now, if I bit in and didn't know it wasn't there, and I bit in, it's not there, I'm like, where is it? This is what I wanted. There's nothing to this. This donut's terrible because it doesn't have filling. It doesn't have the custard. It's what I wanted. Now, I would go to town on that donut trying to find the custard. I would eat the whole thing, but I wouldn't find it. That's what's happening with our writer here. He is looking everywhere. He is chomping down on the donut of life, but there is no filling. That's what's happening with this guy. He is searching. He is searching for substance, that filling, but he cannot find it. So let's see how he views things in this mess of trying to find it. Let's read verses 3 through 11. So we have Ecclesiastes 1, verses 3 through 11. It says this: what do people gain from all their labors at which they toil under the sun? Generations come, generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and it turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, there they return again. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. What has been will be again. What's been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, this is something new? It was here already long ago. It was here long before our time. No one remembers the former generations, and even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow them. Okay, let's see what he's got. This is kind of the, we'll call it the pessimistic experience, is kind of what he's going through. So verses 3 and 4, he starts off with talking about all the labors which people do. And this wouldn't just be like your job. It would include your job with work, but this would be any sort of exertion. This could be physical, emotional, mental, spiritual, all these labors, anything you work at. What? All right, so he's kind of like, all of these things, and we do them all under the sun. This is a phrase used a lot in Ecclesiastes. What he means is here on earth, so separated from the heavenly realm or separated from the heavens. He's doing that because he's saying here on earth, the things that as humans we actually experience and live day to day. That's what he's getting at. So we have all these exertions, mental, physical, emotional, spiritual, here under the sun. What do we gain from them? You know, what are the dividends? Tax forms are coming out. If any of you have investments, you get the sheet that tells you what's the dividend. What did you profit from that? And he's finding none. No profit. It's like he's saying, I want my life to be a profitable thing, but right now my life is acting like a nonprofit. That's what he's getting at. And I think part of the issue for him is he's coming to terms with how short life is and how permanent death is. He's saying, we're here for such a short time. And then we die. The generations come, generations go. But the earth is still here. Earth is permanent, is what he's getting at. So he's like, man, we're so finite. It's so small. Nothing matters. He's like, the sun rises and the sun sets. The wind, it goes round and round. It keeps doing this. Streams go into the sea, but the sea never fills. He's saying everything is just like a cycle. It's so cyclical. It just keeps happening and happening again, and you don't actually get anywhere. There's no ending. There's no accomplishment. This is, he's like, man, it is the same stuff, different day. That's what it is. And that's what he's feeling. There's no getting anywhere. And then he talks about, is anything really new? He's like, is anything new? And he's basically saying, he gets a little, what would be Greek philosophical here, because he says anything new was really just here before. So anything that we think is new is an illusion, because it was actually here before. It's just old and been tried to make new. He's like, it didn't break this life and death cycle we have, so it's not really new. It's just old. It doesn't matter. Then he goes in, he finishes off this section with more life and death. He's like, generations are still going to come, and nobody remembers them, because they're not really new. And then I'm going to go, and nobody's going to remember me. So he's being, man, nothing means anything. There is just no substance. That is how he starts this book. How much fun is that? We had to, I took Old Testament survey when I was in seminary, and when we went through the books, our instructor wanted us to read every book in a single sitting. So I had to read through all of Ecclesiastes, and I got done. I was like, this dude just needs a hug or something. Like, man. But think about it, especially look at this start. He's just, it's so hard. You want to find the good in it. And it's like, where is it? If you've ever watched a show or a movie where they bring out a character or situation, you're like, all right, there's going to be a redeeming quality to them. I watched the Netflix series that ended a few years ago, House of Cards. Did anybody watch that, House of Cards? Okay. I'm not going to go ahead and recommend it or anything. It's this political kind of drama thing, which I like politics. But I'm watching it, and throughout every season, I'm like, okay, who's going to be the good character? Who's got the redeeming quality? And none of them had this. These all felt like just bad people with ulterior motives and everything. And that's what I feel like is going on here. I want there to be good. I want there to be something redeeming. And in this first part, our writer is just like, everything is terrible and nothing means everything. But that's our task, is to try to find something a little more redeeming or applicable. So we're going to try to do that so that we don't walk away feeling like everything is absolutely meaningless. So what do we do? All right, what are we going to do with this? Today we're going to talk broadly. Like I said, in the next few weeks, we will talk about finding meaning in pleasure, money, and work specifically. Those are coming in other chapters. But today, what we're going to talk about is when we bite into that donut of life and there is no filling. Well, maybe you can figure out where we're going, maybe not. But I would say this, when life feels like an empty donut, we want to let Jesus be the filling. So we want to let Jesus be the filling to our donut. Now, we're going to fill the donut in two ways. And the first one, we're going to address what our writer does, which is when life feels like an endless cycle. When you're doing the same stuff time and time again, day after day, week after week, and you're not going anywhere. We like to feel like we accomplish things. It's why people set goals and have benchmarks. We were talking about this, I think it's small group on Wednesday. We're like, any job you work in now has you set goals. You have benchmarks to reach, and they have ways to measure them because they want you to get somewhere. But when you feel like you're not, who here has run laps on a track or swam laps in a pool before? All right, many more, right? Do you actually get anywhere when you do that? I see nods yes and no. Okay, that's good. I remember running... back in high school, we still had to do the physical fitness tests or whatever they called it. And we had a full-blown field house at our high school, so we had an indoor track. And to cover a mile, you had to run around the track 10 times. That was our mile. And it's every time you go by, you're passing the same stuff. Oh, there's the press box. There's that basketball court. Oh, there's the bleacher. Yep, there's the corner by the water fountains. And we just keep going, going, and going. We tried to entertain ourselves. There was a group of us that all played basketball together. So we took turns each lap, like pacing. So somebody would go first and everybody would follow them just to try to keep it interesting. Now, I would say we covered the mile, the distance. We didn't go anywhere because we ended where we started. So we got done with that being like, cool, we ran a mile. And our basketball coach is like, yeah, you all did it really well. But we didn't really get anywhere. So that's what we got to look at. Now, it doesn't mean, though, that we didn't accomplish anything. Because running a mile or swimming, however far you swim, that's accomplishing something, even if you're going back and forth or round and round. So imagine Jesus being that pacer, that you're following him even in the cycle, because following Jesus always does something. John 8:12 says, when Jesus spoke again to the people, he said, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. this verse teaches us to follow Jesus, but it doesn't say that it's going to take us somewhere specific or that we're going to even accomplish something specific. But it does say we'll have the light of life. That light is substance. The light fills where it's dark. So every day that we follow Jesus, every day that we grow in relationship with him, we are getting somewhere. And that place is closer to him, and that is something. And that is something we want. So even when everything else in life feels like a loop, or you're swimming laps, or whatever it is, just a back and forth, you are absolutely getting somewhere when you follow Jesus and you have that substance that is the light of life. So that's how we can look at Jesus as filling the donut when things seem like they're just a cycle. But then he talks about anything new. Is anything new, or is it really just something old? Let's think about new stuff, because there are new products that drop all the time in the world, right? That's what commercials are about. There's something new. So I looked it up. The brand new iPhone 14 Pro, all right? I'm an iPhoner, so I have it. If you read the Apple website, right, the glass half full approach would say, this is a brand new phone. It says it has epic pro level photo and video, the longest battery life ever, emergency SOS and crash detection, a ceramic shield, new safety features, and 21% more screen. Why 21%? I don't know. I've been trying to figure that one out all week since I looked that up, but I don't know why 21. But the half-empty approach would say, that's not actually new. All you did was take all this technology and just try to make it a little better. Or you could say, man, we've had phones for how many years, and now you're just putting it in their pocket. It's all old. You just tried to make it new. That's kind of the feeling. That's kind of the way I think our writer in Ecclesiastes would say. He's like, nah, it was just something old that's been made new. So here's the thing. Just because something seems old or has been done before doesn't mean it can't be improved upon or have new meaning. Lamentations 3, 22 and 23 says, because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. God's compassions and mercies are new every morning. They are brand new. Even if he's giving us mercy for the same thing we've done before, that is new mercy and new compassion every day he gives it. Every day we have the opportunity to start fresh and have something new with God. All right? Have we had the love of God our whole lives? Yes, we have. But it's still new every day, and we still have it. It's not just an old thing that we kick to the side. It is new. It is fresh every day. Psalm 96:1 says, sing to the Lord a new song. Sing to the Lord all the earth. I've been a worship leader for a long time, so this verse gets used a lot as a reason to sing brand new songs. And that's fine. You can take it that way, but I think that kind of misses the mark a little bit. I think it's saying, sing to the Lord a new song. That just means sing to God or come to God. It can be, if we're talking about an actual song, done a different way or different meaning behind it. Some of these songs I have sung for years, and they take on a different meaning depending on what my circumstances, just like how we looked at these cups, your circumstances might change what's going on for you. So these songs can take on a new meaning even if it's the same thing. So think about when life feels bland or it feels like there's nothing new. It's like, man, it's just all monotonous. Are you asking Jesus to be present with you? Are you asking to see him work every day? Are you asking for his eyes? Because he can do something new in any given situation. It could be a new conversation with the people you see every day. You might be in a conversation with them every day, but God might give you something new in that conversation. It can lead to a new relationship, right? And a new way of growing deeper with somebody. Maybe you ask for God's eyes as you're driving the same route to work or kids to school or wherever every day. Maybe you can see something differently and develop a new perspective on what you see, even though it feels like the same thing, because Jesus can give you that. But we have to look for him to help us see it, to help us experience it. So we need to let Jesus be the substance to do something new. So if you get into a mode of life, whether you are a glass half empty, glass half full, totally depends on the circumstance, that doesn't really matter. Because I think if we're being honest, there will come times in our life, and a few of you touched on this, where it feels like nothing means anything, or we have that pessimistic approach, or we get into just the routine and nothing feels new. When life feels like a loop, when life feels stagnant, when the donut has no filling, no matter how hard you're trying, look to Jesus. It doesn't take a lot. It doesn't take you spending an entire day with him. That's great if you can do that, but it might just take 5 minutes in the morning spending time with him, reading your Bible or praying or just anything to let him fill you for that day, to help him see, have him help you see something new, or to get out of that loop and feel like it's different and you're really getting somewhere. We have to be willing to let Jesus fill us up. We have to ask Jesus to fill the donut when we feel empty. Let's pray. God, I thank you for this morning. And God, I thank you that as we dive into this book of Ecclesiastes, God, it's a book I find challenging, that we would pull something out of our week, God, that we can, as our writer searches for meaning, God, that we would look to you to be the meaning in all of this. God, and that whatever our circumstances are in life, God, as we all come from different places and have different things going on in life, God, but you're the kind of the constant and the thing that's the same with all of us. So I pray that we would all come to you in our own way and ask you to fill us, God, and that you would fill us in whatever ways we need, that you would help us see things new, that you would help us feel like we're going somewhere as we grow closer to you, or that you would bring new things into our life in your way. So God, I pray that as we continue in this book, God, and even through this week, that throughout the search for meaning, God, that we would always remember that you absolutely mean something to us. In your name.